the recording signal. Hope we got it. Well, this is an opportunity for us, a privilege for us to have a chance to be in discussion with Dr. Kmita. And so he doesn't have a lecture prepared, I know. He didn't stick to the one he was going to give today anyhow, he told us. So I think let's just open it up for question and answer type of dialogue. Anyone want to begin?
He said he wouldn't pronounce his name correctly, so would he give us the second chance?
Can you give us the correct pronunciation of your name?
Which name now, the first one or the second one or both?
Let's hear both of them, yes.
Stefania. You would normally say Stefania. It's a bit more complicated. Stefania. Maybe it's a German influence, I think. Yeah. Kmita.
Kmita. Now we have our correction.
But.
And what's the other name?
No.
Okay.
Does the name have a particular meaning in your language?
Yes, I suspect that you heard something about Africa and that names has got a particular meaning. That's true of Africa. I can tell you the meaning of the names of my children and my children's and why they were given. But at this moment, I don't want really to. I feel like Juni, and I want just to listen to more stories.
But you're in a good world here.
Would you tell us the story?
Well, I'm not a good storyteller, although Africans normally are good storytellers. When our 10-year-old boy was born in Windhoek, the capital. I took my wife to the clinic, and the boy was born around, say, 11 o'clock in the evening. And because maybe of that name, which is also so known negatively by some people in Namibia, the nurse in charge was so unfriendly with her, and she at 6 o'clock she was asked to go to the shower and take a shower after the birth of the child at 11 o'clock in the evening, just a few hours after that. And she fell down on the way to the bathroom, and her hip was, is it hip? Is it
trans? Yes, hip.
Was injured. And we could feel the, even when I went there later, we could feel the hostility, and we took her out of the clinic yesterday after the birth of the child. And on that same day, it was the 6th of December 1973, we got the news all over the radio that Bishop Manus Buthelezi was banned. He was at that time is one of the bishops of Elxa, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Southern Africa. And he was that time serving as the director of the Christian Institute, the now banned Christian Institute in Natal, in the branch of Natal. And thus we called him the boy now, not Manus Buthelezi. Not Matthew, but we called him Tuyama, which means Lord, save us. Thinking of the treatment the mother got at the clinic, and the banning of Dr. Manus Buthelezi. When our 9-year-old daughter was born, we were not so sure, shall we now? Now we were at a different place at the coast, in Swakopmund. But I was on my way to South Africa to a meeting of the Association of Theological Seminaries. And we decided not to go to the clinic, but to try and see what we can. And my wife was staying with our friends, a pastor and his wife, who were serving in Namibia. They had been kicked out of Namibia a few years ago. And that night, when the child was born, Mrs. Messerschmidt, Brigitte Messerschmidt, was the midwife in the mission house. And all went well. There was no complications, no problems. And I received a phone call from that town that all went well and a daughter was born. And we decided to call her Unochari, which means the Lord is merciful. That's a common name also given to girls in our country. And then a few years after that, we were serving a congregation in the south of Namibia. And well, I'm not so sure always when I'm talking of these things. I hear some people, some male person saying, when we were expecting our baby, and somebody and somebody once told me, yes, you must be kidding, you are not expecting, that's your wife who were expecting. I think I stick to that when we were expecting our youngest daughter, we were not so sure now what to do. Shall we go to the hospital? And we thought, well, I was just only 2 years in that congregation and many people didn't know me so well, and we said, well, let's go then to the clinic and maybe the treatment will be good. And my wife said, well, if the Lord is there, why should we fear? Let's try it. And that was the text of this evening, which was read this evening, Romans 8, verses 31 onward. I don't know whether I can say it correctly in English, but it goes like that. If God is with us, who will be against us? So, and in my language, you can shorten it very much. I'm saying cheri po, and that means if God is on our side. When I was, which I don't want to mention, when I was arrested during the interrogations, the officer interrogating me said, well, there is something which I can't understand. You claim to be a Christian and you are a pastor, you have been ordained, but all your children has got unchristian names. Well, I think I'll stop here with this story.
Is there a time, or was there a time in your life when the oppression was noticeably less than it is now in Namibia?
Well, I'm trying to think whether there was such a time, but I find it difficult to find such a time. It has been all the same, and I think it's becoming more intensified, more dangerous as it was. But I can't think of a time when it was a bit much more better. Maybe the time when I was a child, then then you will accept things as they are, and you are happy that you have got something to eat and can play and so. But I don't think there was any time in Namibia where people could say that was much more better. And it's getting worse, I'm sure.
Are all the whites in Namibia then identified with apartheid, or are there some who dislike it?
You have got some people, some white people, who repented from that sin and decided to fight against it. You have got very famous names. You have got the name of Bayes Naudier. I don't know whether you heard about him. Mm-hmm. He was schooled together with the late Prime Minister and President of South Africa, Foster. He was a member of the well, if you are a foreigner, you should be very careful. I nearly said he was a member of the South African Ku Klux Klan. I don't know whether one can say that kind of a thing. The Bruderbond. He was a minister of the Dutch Reformed Church. And he was transformed completely, which shows that God is still at work in his world. You have got Theo Kotze, whom you would see in, or some of you saw in the film Cry for Freedom, also a so-called Afrikaner. He is now a refugee in London, Birmingham. Yes, and I can continue on to say names. You have got those who will dislike apartheid but we feel that it is very dangerous to say anything against that, because then you are rejected out of the community, your children have got problems and that kind of things, and there's many of them keep quiet. But you have got those who spoke out and were speaking out and risking their lives and were being banned and so on.
The question I'd like to ask is that when you take the risk to leave your country, which is real, and as you said today, even what you do might report it back. Why do you do that? Why would you come here? What do you want from us, and what can we do? Why do you do this?
Yeah, well, this morning I said that was because of the liberating present reality of Jesus Christ. Who through his word, his life, death and resurrection has shown us that we are liberated people. It's out of that faith that we are doing the things we are doing, even risking our lives. As I also said in the morning, I'm here as a member of our one world in which we are living, and I was invited to come here and to share with you what we are experiencing there. I find it always difficult to say, and that's what I want you to do. I think always of the story of the Good Samaritan, who saw that man alongside the road. And I don't remember, maybe I didn't read it well, I don't remember him asking questions what he should do. Well, I'm serious, I should look into that again. And I think that man on the road was beaten unconscious. He couldn't speak. And I was just wondering if that Good Samaritan would have decided for himself just to say, Well, I would like to help. At first, I would ask questions what to do. And this I will wait until he gain his consciousness. Then I am sure that man would have died. But he started to do what he can. And maybe later on, when the situation became much more better, the man himself could say, well, I like you to help me this way and not this way. And so, but the man started to do something. And this I would like to share with you without asking really anything, and to go home and to leave you with what I shared with you. And you might decide to do something out of your own situation. I'm sure for me it will be enough if you, out of this situation, say, as we were told on the first day, to ask the Lord to open our eyes to see those who are suffering around us. I think that will be enough. It doesn't need to be Namibians at all. But if my sharing with you can help you to look into this world with different eyes, and to help those who are suffering in this world, they need not to be always black, but maybe there are also whites around you. People, human beings, who are suffering and who need help. If my sharing could also do that, it will be enough for me.
When we discuss Namibia in our congregations, inevitably somebody says, well, SWAPO is a communist-dominated movement. Would you address yourself to that?
Yes. To that question, I sometimes, in myself, although answering different things, but in myself, I say, well, what about that? What's wrong with that? If is it then the case? We never suffered under communists. But we suffered under the so-called, shall I say so? Maybe it's not right, that sounds arrogant, let me say straightforward. We suffered under the Western Christian civilization. Now for more than, that was in 1884. That it started in Namibia, but not from Marxists, from people who were saying that there is no God, but from people who proclaimed Jesus Christ. And in the name of Christianity and civilization and whatever you have, we have been suffering up to this day. That will be my first reaction, that, well, then, if we have been born to be slaves forever, that will be good to have a little change then. And on the other hand, I would say, those people came first to the Western countries, look for help. And as I heard, they were not given that help at all. And they went to the East and got that help. But what I know is that there are also Western countries which are helping SWAPO financially. And I can mention here Holland, the Scandinavian countries. And I think some organizations here, also in the United States. I think I will stop first here. Maybe you can continue.
Where did you receive your education?
In Namibia. And far most not from the seminary, but from oppression, from suffering. what I learned in jail for 1 month, I think that was more than I learned for 4 or 5 years in seminary.
You mentioned that someone suggested to you that you should resign from your role as a pastor in your church to become a politician. How realistic is that kind of a suggestion, or is that just a kind of a confrontation with Satan that tempts you to turn away?
Yes, I wish you could have been in Namibia and listened to the sermons of the Dutch Reformed Church, which is a state church, if one, although they would say, well, we are not. And you would hear of the Lord and your heart and your soul. You would also see that their church buildings are crowded, people are going to church, the white South Africans. But their religion is such a religion where it comes to the suffering of other people, where it should not say anything. A religion where it comes to themselves, and I should say, when they were oppressed by the British in the last century, they fought against the British in the name of religion and would quote even Exodus 3 to justify their struggle against the British. But where it come to us, that's enough. You have got the Lord in your heart. A farmer will go from his farm and go to church in the town and pray and sing and even cry, and then go back to his farm and start to shout at his servants as if he was not that person who was in the church service. I might tell you one incident which took place, well, there are hundreds and thousands of incidents, which took place in the southern part of Namibia. A white farmer died, and a memorial service, or how shall I say now, a service from where he was buried was conducted in the town near the farm, and the servants who were blacks came just to attend the service, and they were told at the door that they will be not allowed to enter the church building because of the law of the church, but that they could be permitted to stand outside. And at the entrance of that church building, you would read the words from 1 Corinthians 13, the last verse, or verse 13, and now remain the three: hope, love, faith, and the biggest of all the three is then love. But they stood outside in front of that door, and the pastor saw them and came out and told them that they were not allowed to stand there, but that they could go to the graveyard and wait there. And as they went over, and that whole thing leaked out to the press, and a journalist drove there and wanted to talk to the pastor, and the pastor was not available for comment. And but there was a church elder who was available for comment. And he said, well, he don't want, what the journalist is really trying to do is to mix politics with religion. By asking those kind of questions, why blacks were not allowed, and so that's political questions. And then he continued by saying, well, he believed that the church is right by doing that, and even he won't allow blacks, those who are working for him, to shed tears on his coffin because it might get dirty. Now that was reported in Namibia, and that's one just of the examples. There's politics and religion should be divided, but where it comes to the blacks, where it comes to the whites, they might serve, even ministers might serve as members of parliament and so on, but where it comes to us, it's communistic inspired and whatever, if you say something, therefore you better resign and become a politician as to hide behind the pulpit.
Is it realistic for a black in Namibia to be a politician?
Well, that's realistic for a black in Namibia to be a freedom fighter. I'm sorry to say that.
Do you have a vision of peace in Namibia?
Yeah. I think that question was asked to the Jews when, before the creation of the State of Israel. When will be the day? And they would say, next year in Jerusalem. I've got a vision of peace. Not only for the oppressed, and not only for Namibia, but for the whole world. When one of our bishops was asked that question, do you have got still hope that your country will be free? He said, well, as a human being, I would say, I don't see any hope. But we are slaves of hope.
Dr. Kameda, we have differences of opinion in the United States about the question of divestment or disinvestment of funds in corporations that work in South Africa. What is your view about that?
That's a very dangerous one, that one. I was asked that question last year in Minneapolis. And I tried to answer it indirectly, because I was also a bit afraid to answer it directly. I said, I'm not such a courageous person, as I told you in the morning. When the United States imposed sanctions on Poland, I don't think that the Poles were asked any questions, whether they would like it or not. But when it comes to Namibia, I wonder the certain democracy of starting to debate it, whether it was right to divest or not. When it comes to Poland, it was decided and imposed immediately. But in our situation, you would hear Well, after all, that the blacks were going to suffer. From what? We know how to suffer anyway. We can keep on even drinking water for the whole week and still be alive. I'm not joking. I know what I'm talking of. There were years when there were really not enough and so on. And we could survive nearly on nothing. Because we are used to that. Yes, we are prepared to suffer. But why then the certain democracy when it comes to South Africa? Is it really the issue that divestment will be negative or positive or whatever? Is it really the issue, or is the issue that the links with racist South Africa are so cordial that people are not willing to divest? Because I am not saying that you should divest, but I'm just posing questions you should really think about that, and no, let me not say that, but I want to say that.
What do you make of the nonviolent movement, you know, throughout the world in relationship to what you think is necessary in the movement?
The nonviolent movement. What I think about that?
Well, you know, how do we put together
a
concept of nonviolence and what probably has to happen in Africa for something to change?
I don't know whether I got your question correctly.
How does nonviolence relate to the situation in Namibia,
mm-hmm.
perhaps?
Mm-hmm. The church.
Excuse me, I have heard people from Africa and Southern Africa say they get tired of the Western world always talking peace and nonviolence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they think that's a cover up. They think it's just a USSR, USA problem, and it isn't related to the whole world. And we have to look at things differently from how we do in the USA, even those who are such a conservative peace.
Mm-hmm. You mean our globally the whole question of the arm race, and we are very much concerned about that because it affects us also. Maybe that some people feels, because of the situation in which we are living in, that our immediate question is the question of our emancipation, the question of liberation from oppression. But all those things has been linked with each other: oppression, arm race, and whatever. And we are very much concerned about that, because we know that that South Africa itself has been also involved in that. And that's only a question of announcing it, that they have got nuclear arms. I'm sure that they have got it. And we view with fear the negotiations which are taking place between the United States and USSR, because they are also so artificial. I don't know. As I have said, the weapons are not really the starting of war, but the breaking down of relationships. And as long as that they can negotiate as they would, they can have their best negotiators, I'm sure that they won't really succeed, because that's not the point. The point is the breaking down of relationships, and that people divide the world so much instead of trying to think of the world as or in harmony, to think of the world as one God's creation. Those in the East would talk of the capitalist enemies. Those in the West would talk of the Marxist, communist enemies behind the Iron Curtains. And as long as these concepts of those are the enemies and these are the enemies, as long as that concepts exist, I don't think that negotiations to stop the arms race will help anything. I think the discussions should really go to the source of division. That people in this world to stop thinking of each other as enemies, but looking to each other as human beings. Thus, we do support the peace movements. And I personally do that. As signs of hope. And as I've also said in this morning, peace won't start with burying and destroying the dangerous weapons, but it will start with the restoring of the broken relationships. After a conversation, or during a conversation somewhere in Europe, in Western Europe, what I could only find in that conversation was the enemy concept, and the enemies, and those are enemies, and so. And the people were talking of the Russians. And I was asked if I have got a question or anything to say after that discussion. And my question was, are Russians also human beings? And I thought that people would laugh at me and say, well, that, what a stupid question. But there was nearly silence for 5 minutes. And the person who spoke say, well, it struck me. We are not thinking in those terms. We are thinking only of enemies. This we are very much concerned. I don't know whether I'm answering your question.
Do you see a time when you would be willing to take up arms in
the media? Well, I'm expecting or hoping for a time when a ceasefire will be signed, because arms has been taken up already, and people are fighting. And more than 10,000 people died. in that arms trap in Namibia. This, our hope and prayer is that a ceasefire will be signed between SWAPO and South Africa. And we had hopes that it will take place. But that hopes has been destroyed again. And this time, particularly by your administration here. I'm not saying it to in order to accuse and so, but that's what is happening.
Would you comment on the U.S. government's position about Cuban troops in Angola from your perspective?
Yes, that's what I'm saying, that our hopes has been destroyed by the linkage of the presence of the Cubans in Angola with the implementation of Resolution 435. We hoped, or let me start by saying this, that the United Nations struggled, resolutions was passed to liberate Namibia, but they didn't succeed. And then five nations from the West came together because of their special relationships, economically, politically, culturally, with South Africa. And they came together and said, well, let's negotiate with South Africa and those concerned to try and find a settlement. Because South Africa was not trusting the United Nations, they said it was partial towards SWAPO. And those negotiations with South Africa and SWAPO and the United Nations was really successful, I should say. And after negotiating for almost 3-4 years, they took, the five nations, the results of their negotiations to the United Nations Security Council. And the United Nations Security Council looked into that, in the results. And they said, well, congratulations, that's something. And SWAPO agreed to that, South Africa agreed to that. And it was discussed in the Security Council, it was rewritten, and it was put on a vote. I was fortunate to be there that day in the Security Council. Myself and the late Bishop Awala were invited as observer to that Security Council meeting. The Soviets decided not to support that resolution, which came out of the negotiations of the Western countries. But they also decided not to veto it. Is it right? Mm-hmm. But to abstain. That was two countries from the East who abstained. That was Russia and Czechoslovakia. China said, well, they won't participate at all in the discussion of that resolution because the two imperialist powers manipulating and looking for ways to work together with South Africa. They walk out. And this resolution was passed, which became then Resolution 435. And the Western countries, and if we can talk now here as for a moment, try to think as politicians, the Western countries were concerned that the Eastern countries are giving so much support to the liberation movement and that they are very much involved and that after independence that they might have more opportunity to come into the country and a privileged position and so on. Thus, that was really something here, a credit for the Western countries, that resolution which came out of their negotiations with South Africa was accepted by the Security Council and passed as resolution 435. And asked him to try and force South Africa not to link the presence of the Cubans in Angola with the implementation of that resolution, because human lives are at stake, and as soon let that resolution be implemented as soon as it can. And he said, amazingly, well, this time it is really not South Africa, but that's a United States government. There's, at this moment, well, we don't know what South Africa will say after if there is any solution for the Cuban issue. But at this moment, that this country's government, which is blocking our independence, and every Namibian who is dying even this night, is to be blamed on that linkage of the presence of the Cubans in Angola by the United States government.
There are quite a few refugees from Namibia in Angola. How many are there at the present time?
Well, I haven't checked with the Liberation Movement whether I can say that. Maybe for some reasons they won't like it to be said this. I don't know, maybe it has been mentioned in the package you are receiving. If not, you better check with the SWAPO representative in New York, and if he agrees to that you should know how many they are, that's fine then. But I think I don't want to say how many they are.
You mentioned the United States involvement in trying to, with South Africa, make Namibia a nuclear waste site, or find a waste site. My question is, what material, what source might we read of this? You mentioned there was evidence for this and proof for this.
Yeah, I've got your question. What I mentioned in Budapest at the Lutheran World Assembly was it was a quotation out of what was reported extensively in Namibia, even by the right-wing press, reporting that there were negotiations taking place between South Africa on the one side and the United States and Western Germany on the other side for dumping nuclear waste in the Namib Desert or somewhere for $1 billion. Sounds good. Mm-hmm. I don't know what will nuclear waste then will do after that. Mm. Who will enjoy that money? Mm. South Africa even itself admitted, they said, well, that's true that negotiations were taking place. They refused to say with whom they were conducting those negotiations. But in the press, even in the press which is supporting South Africa itself, it was said that it was South Africa together with the United States and Western Germany. And I reported that, which was reported in Namibia. And immediately there was a sharp reaction from Washington. I had a chance to talk with somebody from the German embassy in Pretoria. He visited us in Windhoek, Dr. Allround, and I talked to him. Well, I didn't really brought up the matter. He asked about the church and the role of the church and so, and I wanted to bring it up, but I thought, well, let him do it first. And we discussed, and he looked at his watch and said, well, I have to go now. And at the door he said, well, by the way, I thought that you were going to bring in the question of nuclear waste. I said, well, I'm happy that you are mentioning it. I've been waiting to hear from you. Because you didn't react against that. And his answer was, well, we are not the only one who are negotiating that. I asked him, with whom are you? Are you negotiating with somebody then to dump nuclear with some way? So no, I'm not going to answer that, but I'm saying we are not the only ones who are negotiating with South Africa. This, I haven't got material, another material that moment. I will be in Washington for within a few days, and I hope to hear some more.
One more quick question, then we'll stop.
You feel that the people of Namibia would rather have their freedom with a communist government than to have no freedom.
Would you repeat it again?
The people of Namibia, as you see, would rather have a communist government than to continue living as they are.
Yeah. I wish you could have asked this question too. Yeah, I mustn't keep on saying ordinary Namibian as if I'm not an ordinary Namibian. Just take somebody from the rural area, from somewhere, and ask that question. And you say, well, see, communism, it's your problem, it's not our problem. We want our freedom, please. And what we do with our country after independence, that's our own matter.
Great. Good answer.
Well, we know that he appreciates the fact that we've had this chance to hear from you, and we really want to thank you for your accepting the invitation to come, and you're on a mission, and we just pray that God will be with you in your mission. We'll be remembering you and your people in our prayers. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.